The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The world is a complicated place. You need someone to expose the political fakers, fixers, and takers, and to cut through the mindless chatter and misdirection to help you make sense of it all. That person is Dan Proft, and this is The Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to The Dan Proft Show, where we have a number of legal issues to go over with our next guest, starting with news that broke today. That news: a federal appeals court in D.C. by a 2-1 vote, U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, directing U.S. District Judge Emmett Sullivan to dismiss the charges against General Michael Flynn that the Department of Justice had tried thus far in vain to dismiss, suggesting what I think is relatively obvious. Surely it was obvious to Barr, but just sort of as a matter of course, that the judge isn't supposed to play the role of prosecutor. That's essentially what the U.S. District, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia ruled. And we start there with John Yoo. He is the Emanuel S. Heller Professor of Law at the University of California, Berkeley, and author of the soon-to-be-released Defender-in-Chief, Donald Trump's Fight for Presidential Power. John, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Dan. Anytime.
Your view on the U.S. Court of Appeals in D.C., their decision on the Flynn case?
I think they reached the right call. If you look at the opinion, it makes clear that the power to prosecute is an executive power. It's given in the Constitution to the president and the president alone. And what the court says is if the president, acting through the Justice Department, chooses to drop charges, the defendant certainly not going to complain. They agree. Mr. Flynn here agreed the charges should be dropped. Then there's no case. And if there's no case, under the Constitution, the courts have no role to step in and force the executive branch to continue prosecuting case that it doesn't want to. So in normal times, with a normal defendant, this would be an easy case. Wouldn't even require all the attention and ever go up to the D.C. Circuit and maybe even to the Supreme Court still. The only reason it's there is because this involves General Flynn and accusations of corruption and the Russia collusion probe, which turned out to be groundless against President Trump.
I mean, not to prolong this saga any longer, but I mean, Judge Sullivan is so far out of bounds. And by the way, whichever appellate court judge it was that voted to uphold Judge Sullivan's decision in the case, I mean, they're so far out of bounds. This is not a close call, is it? This is something that it seems to me it should be the subject of professional sanction.
It's not a close call. If you look at the opinion, there are numerous cases in the Washington, D.C. federal court saying the court's role here, actually, it's the opposite of what this judge, Judge Sullivan, wanted to do. The only time a federal judge would really review the dropping of charges is to make sure the prosecution's not dropping the charges and then bringing them again, dropping them, bringing them again. It's to protect the defendant. It's not to launch some kind of expedition on the part of a federal judge to satisfy his curiosity about why a president decides to drive charges or not. It's quite an intrusion into the executive branch and really unwarranted expansion in judicial power. And if Judge Sullivan had not been slapped back here, he would have kept going, right? He wanted to appoint former judges to be sort of pretend faux prosecutors. He wanted to have multiple hearings. He wanted to drag this thing out for months. So it's a very good thing that the D.C. Circuit stepped in here and called the circus to a halt.
Speaking of incursions into the executive branch, it seems that Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts is guilty of that as well in his decision on DACA, where he essentially, as I understand from reading it, argues that a president can act unconstitutionally, but a subsequent president can't undo that unconstitutional act by a previous president without going through some administrative bureaucratic process.
Well, Dan, I give you an A for that. You really read the opinion quite well.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, now explain to me how that's possible. Okay.
This is a real, now there's one bad way to read it and even a worse way to read it. The bad way to read it is Trump still could undo President Obama's illegal DACA and DAPA order, but it would take a year or two. That's one thing the Supreme Court said. But think about that. The worst version, which is what you just set out, is that means a president could do something illegal, clearly illegal, runs against the Constitution. The Constitution here gives a power of immigration to Congress. It doesn't say the president can decide visa categories and change the number of people out in the country. That's only up to Congress. So the president could do something unconstitutional and illegal and can do it for years and years. And then a new president comes in, and he wants to obey the Constitution. Here, Trump wants DACA. He just wants it done the right way. He wants it done through Congress. And according to the court, the president has to keep doing an unconstitutional thing for a year or two. That is incredible. In fact, I think that violates the president's oath to uphold and defend the Constitution, and it offends the president's duty to take care the laws are faithfully executed. It's incredible.
Maybe that'll be the basis for his next impeachment, that he's following. I mean, this is so this is just incredible. And also, too, I mean, not that this was necessary, but it just adds to the absurdity of the Roberts opinion, which is, I mean, President Trump a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, was in negotiations with Congress on DACA. He was willing to grant some extended status to the 700,000 DACA designees. Then he went further and said, not only will I do that if you give me border wall funding, I'll grant some extended status to the additional 1.1 million individuals in this country who could be eligible for DACA but didn't apply. So, I mean, that this is the negotiation and the bartering between the executive and the legislative branch. There was no reason for the court to get involved.
But 2 points. One is it's actually worse than that because you're right. Congress and the president were negotiating over this. When the court steps in like this, the court torpedoed all the negotiations.
Right.
If you're the Democrats, you would sit there and say, why should we negotiate at all? The court is going to give us everything we want, which they did. And then the second thing is, I think, I have a piece up at Newsweek just an hour ago saying, well, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Why doesn't President Trump use this new power too? So I say President Trump should cut all taxes in the country by 50%. He could just say like Obama did, pay what you want, pay 50% of what you owe. I'm not going to enforce the tax laws anymore. And this will be a great jump start to the economy. And I'm going to give you a permit. And I'm not going to, I'm going to order the IRS not to pursue anybody. And I'm going to cite the DACA opinion as my authority. It's exactly the same thing Obama did with DACA.
I love it. And then if you don't like that, then elect Joe Biden. And in a year or two, after he goes through the administrative process, he may be able to unwind it.
Right. So Trump's tax cuts could be good for 2 to 3 years. He doesn't need Congress.
I like it. Well, that's the cunning thinking of a law professor. I like it. I wanted to get your take on something else, another case. And Ilya Soman, who's a law professor at George Mason University, as you know, wrote about this in Reason Magazine, noting this week the 15th anniversary of the Supreme Court's Kalo decision, Kalo versus City of New London, which was, interestingly, as Professor Soman notes, was acknowledged as an error by Justice John Paul Stevens, who wrote the majority opinion in the case after its decision. But this was the court's really expansion of the definition of public use such that it allowed the government to seize property and turn it over to private hands, which runs afoul of, the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment takings clause for starters. But the 15th anniversary of that, Soman actually gives an interesting perspective, suggesting that, you know, the flip side of that terrible decision was that it generated more laws to protect private property at the state and local level than any other case in U.S. history. And so it actually had the interesting net effect of perhaps having private property rights more protected at the state and local level because of this terrible Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, I think we shouldn't forget that the case was wrong, utterly wrong. As you say, there's so many states rose up and changed their own state constitutions to give more protections for property, that it showed that just the overwhelming majority of Americans thought the decision was wrong. But we should forget the case was a mistake, because what that case did was it basically said it was okay for a city here in New London, but could be any city mm-hmm. in the country, just to take property from one private person and give it to another private person because it feels like it. And that's something that our founders repeatedly said was unconstitutional, what the takings clause was against. But the court said, we can't tell why the city did that, so we're just going to say whenever the city does it, it's a public purpose. I think it was terribly wrong, and I would like to see the court someday overrule that mistaken decision.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice, especially since you have the rare circumstances, as mentioned, where John Paul Stevens admitted that he misinterpreted precedent on the case. I mean, so it'd be nice to see the Supreme Court correct its mistakes and then not require, you know, decades and decades like it took, 56 years for them to correct separate but equal and Plessy v. Ferguson to Brown versus Board of Education. You'd like for the court to be a little bit quicker to remedy its wrongs, right?
Well, it's Chicago's fault because that's where John Paul Stevens was from.
I know, Northwestern, my alma mater, even worse. Professor John Yu, the Emanuel S. Heller Professor of Law at the University of Cal Berkeley, author of the soon-to-be-released Defender-in-Chief, Donald Trump's Fight for Presidential Power. Professor Yu, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. It's a pleasure. Anytime.
Take care.
Don't you forget about me.
Podcast of the show at danproftshow.com.